At my Subway, you would spend your entire 5 to 6 hour work shift with only one other person. And you didn't get to pick that peculiar partner you were spending your precious period with. So that meant I was stuck with some crazy characters. And one of those characters was really, really into that new age snorting healing crystals kind of stuff. And he would specifically talk to me about it because I was the only other person there and all we could do for fun was watching bread rise. Since I was contractually obligated to stay, I would just listen to him ramble about how he thought the universe worked. He told me about chakras and how easy it was to open your third eye through LSD. He told me about scrying using black mirrors and that it's a common misconception that you can get stuck in the mirror, but that's just a myth. That doesn't actually happen. Which is a good thing because getting stuck in a mirror is something I'm constantly worried about as an adult. Oh, and he told me that every illness is in your head and that hospitals can already cure anything, but they're not going to because if they cure you, they're going to lose a customer. So he's just going to stick to his essential oils and non-vaccinated immune system, thank you very much. Listen, you can believe whatever you want to believe, as long as it's not hurting yourself or others, okay? But denying modern medicine? No! No! No, you can't! Do that! No! Since there were still 4 hours of the workday left and I didn't want to argue with him, I would just respond with, uh-huh. He didn't do crack, or meth, or any hard drugs that I know of that would alter his perception of reality. Even though he didn't trust hospitals or doctors, he really believed in the benefits of medical marijuana. If you're ever wondering what kind of person is making your sandwiches, yes, they did give this guy a license to touch your food.
Whoa, dude. My sandwich tastes like colors.
I learned something about myself that day, and that is, I'm obsessed with crazy people. Even though I didn't believe a word he said, I would still ask him questions just to get him talking. Wait, so you're telling me that everything in Naruto is real? Something about talking to him and hearing his perspective was fascinating. This human that I share a planet with exists. What is a crazy person? A crazy person is not someone who has a weird hobby or owns a pet snake. A crazy person is someone who, despite having an astronomical amount of evidence pointing to one idea, believes in the latter. I'm not a psychologist, and maybe I should have consulted one before making this video, but I think crazy people have an unhealthy amount of unchecked distrust and paranoia. I don't know where to even begin talking to crazy people. Their worldview is just so much different than mine. A crazy person will think that someone who has no reason to is lying. NASA's lying about the moon landing. I don't trust NASA. Hospitals are lying about medicine. I don't trust doctors. The government's lying about, well, a lot of things. They're lizard people! Okay, that one might be true. Thankfully, I don't personally know any crazy people. Well, okay, some of my friends are into astrology, but they still get vaccinated, so, you know, you win some, you lose some. However, on the internet, there's an overwhelming abundance of crazy people. I'm guessing crazy people don't go outside because they think the government will target them with directed energy weapons or something. Yeah, only crazy people stay inside wasting hours of their life behind computer screens. One of my guilty pleasures is that while I'm working, I will listen to crazy people talk for hours. It's weirdly my version of ASMR. I've tried listening to podcasts and audiobooks or anything that's good for my brain, but there's something so fascinating about listening to a 50-year-old genuinely tell you about his alien abduction. And it only has 300 views? This man was contacted by aliens, people! Why isn't he on the cover of Time magazine? YouTube will teach you everything you need to know about aliens. Did you know that aliens traveled millions of light years to build pyramids, stomp on our corn, and abduct a couple of crackpots? There's videos of people who will tell you in full confidence about the gray and praying mantis aliens living among us. I mean, the videos barely have any views, but they exist. Most of the views are from me. Okay, all of them. I don't understand how people think the moon landing was faked. There is so much evidence proving that the moon isn't even real. Wake up, sheeple! I gotta be honest, I don't think flat earthers are real. I think they're all just a bunch of trolls trying to get people like me to hate humanity. I'm no rocket scientist, but I know that our understanding of space and gravity is so beyond what shape the earth is. I'm amazed how much free information is available to people, but they still choose not to believe it. So I'm sorry, I just can't accept that flat earthers are real. I mean, I have nothing to back up this idea, though. I guess it's just a crazy theory of mine. Wait. Here's a lighthearted conspiracy for you. Some people think that the creators of the Sonic movie purposely made the design of Sonic bad in the first trailers as a marketing ploy. Everyone was outraged about the bad designs and ended up talking about it, giving the movie free promotion. Meanwhile, the executives were planning to use the better designed Sonic all along. The evidence for this is... well, I'm talking about the Sonic movie right now, so I'm contributing to the theory that this was all for publicity. Another piece of evidence is... look at this. What is this? There's no way that any executive or anyone with two eyeballs would okay this ever. And honestly, I might have believed this conspiracy theory if this movie didn't exist. If it wasn't for the Cats movie, I would have thought Hollywood knew what they were doing too. But because it's current year and these types of things can still get past test screenings, I think sometimes Hollywood is just... no good. I could be totally wrong, though. If anyone watching worked on this movie and wants to be a whistleblower, let me know in the comments. Another rabbit hole I fell down was discovering a group of people called targeted individuals. Targeted individuals are a group of people that think the government is sending NSA agents to harass them. And this isn't just the American government. It turns out that every government in the world is harassing random citizens. They claim that they're being harassed because the government is trying to silence them for speaking the truth, when in reality, they're not speaking anything remotely true. A targeted individual will say things like, "People keep following me. There's a white van that's been parked in front of my house for hours. The government's been using electromagnetic radiation to transmit sounds and thoughts into my head." And the whole time I'm watching these people, I'm thinking, "Yo, that sounds like schizophrenia, my dude. I don't know your life. Maybe you just got out of a really bad cult and you do have stalkers following you. Okay, yes, that happens. But it's not the government." One targeted individual I saw said that the government attacked them with a directed energy weapon and that they've been having migraines and coughing up blood. And I'm just flabbersmacked that someone actually believes this. How do you tell them, "Yo, the government's not harassing you. You probably have something going on in your digestive system. You need to see a doctor and a psychiatrist." And it's easy to point and laugh and make fun of these people, but after hearing their stories, I just feel bad for them. They are going through some major mental stuff, and I think they just need a friend to talk to. Most conspiracies can be disproven with a little bit of research, so it's important to think critically and not immediately believe everything you hear online. And if there's not enough data to make a judgment, then it's okay to say, "I don't know," or "I need to look into this further before making a conclusion." Viral misinformation punishes everybody, so it's important to do research, tests, and evaluations to form a concrete judgment before you hit that retweet button. There is one conspiracy theory, I believe, and that is that Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill...
Mr. James, on Saturday morning at 10:03 a.m., you were observed coloring a picture of a dinosaur. Is that true?
Yeah. Can we go to recess?
Even though your mom had repeatedly asked you to clean up your toys, you disobeyed her and colored anyway?
I plead the fifth.
Your Honor, I have no further questions. James, I hereby sentence you to 15 minutes in the timeout corner.
I'm not going back to timeout!
I'm no scientist, but I think moms play a very important role in society. Without moms, who would drive us to soccer practice? Who else would tell us that it's not okay to eat cupcakes for breakfast? And who else would point at construction workers and say, "That's why you need to get a college education, James"? Oh, and I guess they also give birth to you and take care of you, but like, anyone could do that. Now, before I talk about how I was raised, I just want to give out this disclaimer that my mom is a great mom. She loves me. At least, she used to. If you asked me when I was 15 if my mom was a good mom, 15-year-old me would have said, no. Okay, but like, when I was little, I'd be talking with my friends, and we would be talking about our parents, and they would say stuff like, "Yeah, my mom lets me stay up till midnight, and she lets me play really graphic and vulgar video games. Yeah, my mom doesn't care if I wear clothes with skulls on them, and she lets me eat an entire tub of ice cream for dinner. My mom lets me play with knives." And I used to think that their moms were so much cooler for letting my friends have that much fun. But now, as an adult, I realize the sad truth, that these kids' moms weren't cooler. They just cared about them less. I'm not saying every mom out there is perfect, but a mom who takes the time to make a responsible member of society is pretty high up on the good mom list. Anyways, I love you, Mom, and now I'll immortalize and monetize some of that love. When I was younger and still in need of adult supervision, my mom would take me and my twin sister out to run errands with her, and as you would expect, we were rowdy and wanted to do our own thing. But my mom was prepared for this. She would bring two plastic baggies filled with 10 M&Ms, and every time my sister or I misbehaved, she would eat an M&M right in front of us. And she made sure we saw her eat our M&Ms. She didn't give us a warning either. If we did anything remotely bad, she would say, "Hey, hey, look at me." No. And I think that parenting technique is the psychological reason that M&Ms are my favorite candy bar.
I'm a good boy. I'm a good boy.
Something me and my sister really liked doing was hiding in those circular racks of clothes that they have set up in department stores. Being in the middle of one of those racks is such a surreal experience. I totally recommend it. But my mom didn't like it when we had fun, so she had to reach her arm in and try and grab us. Do you need any help? Oh, no, I'm just trying to get something in the back. There's a really nice belt that would be great for spanking my misbehaving children! I was spanked as a kid. Nothing too bad. I probably deserved it anyway. I don't remember any specific actions I did that earned a spanking, but I do remember outrunning my mom a lot. Another thing my mom did when I was very little was sometimes when she was washing her hands, she would turn to me and go, "Achoo!" and flick water in my face. It really bothered me, but I never spoke out about it. And one day I just couldn't handle it anymore and I started crying. Why are you crying? But I was too sad to articulate how I was really feeling. If you ask her about this today, she'll say that she doesn't remember doing that sneeze gag ever, but I remember it. Vividly. So to get back at her, I put a rubber band around the dish sprayer, so when you turn on the sink, it would spray water at you. Come to think of it, I do remember one reason I was spanked. Every time one of my siblings insulted another sibling or told them to shut up, we would have to pay them 50 cents. This resulted in a really weird dynamic when it came to insults. We would get excited when someone called us a name.
Mom, Luke called me a butthole!
That's 50 cents!
Woo! I'm rich!
But sometimes us kids would just be messing around with each other and we didn't really mean the insults. So we would feel bad taking someone else's 50 cents. Like someone would say, "Hey, James, what's 6 plus 6? And I would say, 9, idiot. And my mom would hear me and say, "James, that's 50 cents. And my sister would feel bad, so she would insult me back and say, "James, you're an unpleasant person." Aw. Swear words cost you $5. That's why I don't swear in videos. But now I can afford it. So, f*** you, Mom. You piece of swear. My mom never washed her mouths out with soap. She wasn't that kind of person, but she did threaten to if we swore. And one time after I said a pretty naughty word, penis, she said, "If you don't behave, I'm going to get the soap." And I said, "I don't care. Soap tastes good." "All right, you big dingus, shove this in your mouth. You won't do it. No balls." So I bit into it and immediately regretted it. Now people are eating soap for views. So I guess we never grow up. Did anyone else's parents put a password on the family computer? Because my parents did, and I didn't know we were the only family that did that. We had a rule in the house that we were only allowed to be on the family computer for however long we read a book for. But luckily, I would just read a book for 15 minutes, get my mom to type in the password, and then she would just forget that I was on the computer and let me stay on for hours. And I played a lot of Neopets and RuneScape. Also, I wasn't allowed to have a TV or a computer in my room, because then I would have easy access to inappropriate animes. When I was little, cell phones were a thing, but my mom didn't let me have one, so I had to talk to all my friends over a landline. I hope I don't have to explain what that is, because that would make me feel really old, and I'm supposed to be in the prime of my life. But basically it meant if I was upstairs in my room talking to a friend, my mom could grab a phone downstairs in the kitchen and just join in our conversation completely uninvited. It didn't matter who I was talking to, I'd be having a conversation like this. I think the reason I internalize and hide away all my problems is because of how invasive my mom is in my personal life.
James, get off the phone and do the dishes.
Mom, I'm on the phone!
Wow, I can't believe you said that to the person who gave birth to you. So what are you two losers talking about?
Luckily, I would almost never be talking to a girl. So at least that didn't happen. This other time, my mom was giving me and my sister a ride to school, and on the radio, she was listening to the worst subgenre of rock music. Christian rock?
Just kidding, you can like whatever you want.
Anyway, we were pulling up to the school, and I told my mom to turn the music down. What? Why? Because I don't want people to think I listen to this, Mom. You see, I was in junior high, so I cared a lot about what other people cared about. So she turned the music down, but as we stepped out of the car, she turned the volume all the way back up and blasted the music for everyone to hear. Looking back at the situation, I think that's pretty hilarious. GG, Mom. These aren't all the times my mom embarrassed me, but those are all the ones I'm going to include in this video.
I didn't even mention the time when I was 4 when my twin sister wanted to do ballet lessons, but she didn't want to do them alone, so my mom signed me up for lessons too. But that's a story for another video.
Love you, Mom. You made me like this.
Uncle James, can we play Space Explorer?
Shut up for a second. I'm watching this unnaturally charming preschool show.
Why are you watching a show for babies?
Okay, kid. This show is extremely sophisticated and can be enjoyed by both children and adults. So why don't you shut your ignorant mouth and find someone who actually loves you to play your silly little space game?
Crikey, Bingo! You can't say that to your sister! You have to say nice things! Treat others how you want to be treated, mate!
Oh, I really needed to hear that today. This episode of The Odd Ones Out is called... Are you familiar with the Australian animated preschool show Bluey? If your TikTok algorithm is anything like mine, you'll have seen a bunch of clips of this blue cartoon dog all over your For You page, paired with Subway Surfer highlights. Wow, TikTok, clips of a foreign preschool show? I thought you were supposed to cater to my interests. Let's read some of the comments on these Bluey TikToks, shall we? No shame, I'm a senior in high school, but I watch Bluey religiously, and this episode had me all in my feels. I'd say I had a good childhood, but I binge Bluey because adult life is so stressful and I'm sad, and it reminds me of a simpler time.
Bluey is for everyone. I'm literally 27, and it's such a comfort show.
Bluey is absolutely destroying me as a teenager who wishes he had this childhood.
In my teen years, and watching full episodes of Bluey.
Watching Bluey high is such a fun time, dude.
Huh.
You know, to me, I'm just thinking out loud here. It seems like a lot of these comments weren't made by preschoolers. What's going on here? Now, if your brain is anything like mine, you'll be thinking, why is this show about Australian dogs so popular with adults who don't even have children? In fact, why does Bluey have over 5 billion views on TikTok, is searched more than Paw Patrol, Peppa Pig, and Cocomelon, and why is this episode number 8 in IMDb's highest rated episodes of all time? This phenomenon intrigued me, and I was also bullied by a large number of people on my own team to watch the show. So, one day I sat down, put on the first episode, and...
I watched all 141 episodes.
Hang on, James! 141? But there's only 129 on Disney Plus!
Don't worry, my fellow obsessive Bluey fan, we're gonna talk about that later. I work in cartoons, and I've been to furry conventions, so Bluey has always been on my radar of shows I'm aware of. And just from the clips that I saw, I adored the art style, especially the backgrounds. So much so that my very own background team has studied and taken inspiration from Bluey's backgrounds. Here you can see my backgrounds taking on a more Bluey aesthetic. I mean, just look at the colors, especially their greens. Oh my god! Doesn't just looking at these backgrounds bring a smile to your face? While I was watching the first season, I realized, oh, okay, I see why this show is so popular. Because it's genuinely a good show. We've already established that the show is great to look at, but the voice acting, the sound design, and the music are equally as amazing, so it's also great to listen to. While most, if not all, other preschool shows will hire adults who can sound like toddlers, Bluey gets actual children to voice the actual child characters. Somehow, every Australian toddler in Bluey can be so expressive and emotional. It's impressive that the show got such a talented cast of child actors who don't sound annoying to listen to. Or maybe it's just their Aussie accents that I like, I don't know. The characters have so much personality, and the comedic timing is something I've never seen before in a preschool show. I can't think of a single time Cocomelon has made me laugh this much, or even smile. The four main characters are Chili and Bandit, the parents, and Bluey and Bingo, the 6 and 4-year-old daughters. Yes, Bluey is a girl. You gotta catch up, dude. Come on, it's 2023. The show also does not hide the fact that it's Australian. It references multiple Australian locations and animals, they call flip-flops thongs, and they say things like, "Oh, nor!" While some preschool shows focus on teaching kids numbers and letters, Bluey focuses on the relationship of the family and teaches its lessons through the make-pretend games that the family plays. And I want to emphasize how perfect these two parents are. These two are the most patient and emotionally aware parents I've seen... ever.
There are multiple times where the parents apologize to their kids for, frankly, not even doing anything wrong. The dad is, like, the most perfect dad role model, okay? Check this out. Bingo was sad that Dad didn't get to see the leaf bug outside. She was like,
Daddy, come and see. Come here, Daddy. Quickly.
But he was too busy playing with Bluey, you know, being a present father figure in her life. And at night, she's all boo-hoo about it, and he kneels down, gets to her level, and apologizes, explaining that he didn't hear her. Now, I don't have any kids, but if I spent my weekend running around with toddlers, and then right before bed, one of them said, you didn't get to see the ladybug, I would say, that's okay. I've already seen a ladybug. Good night. In one episode, Chicken Rat, Bingo lost her favorite toy, and Mom asks, well, where was the last place you had it? The two retrace Bingo's steps, and through flashbacks, we see this bizarre day that Bluey and Bingo had. The very first flashback we see, Bluey and Bingo are cooking a chicken rat egg while wearing weird costumes. And through this creative backward storytelling, we piece together what a chicken rat is and how the kids ended up in this situation. It's episodes like that which really make me appreciate the care that went into this show, and really sets Bluey apart from every other preschool show. Most preschool shows stick to a formula and talk down to the viewer, because typically their viewers are short. As a childless adult, I don't want to say, this show teaches you how to be a good parent, because I don't know how to be a good parent. But on paper, there are lessons in this show that are just as important for the parents to learn. So while watching season one, I got a feel for the world and characters. I started to piece together, okay, this show is depicting perfect parents, it's well written and wholesome, anyone regardless of having kids can enjoy the show. Let's watch the rest, shall we? Season 2 and Season 3 is when things go from 100 to 1,000. This is when episodes cover deep and emotional topics that I think toddlers are too baby to understand. Let's see, there's the struggles of keeping romance in your relationship alive when you have two toddlers to look after, why taking time to play with your kids can have a ripple effect that lasts into adulthood, feeling inadequate as a mom, what it's like having a dad in the army, parents disagreeing on different parenting styles, moms getting tipsy, implied, dealing with infertility, abandonment, potentially a miscarriage, that one's still up in the air, and death. Actually, that one was in season one. You can't even compare Bluey to other preschool shows. Like, what the was Dora the Explorer even doing? Was she even trying to entertain the adults who are also going to be watching her show? Dora had the same formula every episode, and there was a map who sang a song that was just repeating the same three words 14 times. Season 2, there's an episode where Chili is telling Bluey about how when she was a baby, she wasn't crawling or rolling over as fast as the other babies in her mom group, and she compared Bluey's developmental delay to the other babies and felt inadequate as a mother. And then this pink poodle comes to console her, looks directly into the camera, and says, "You're doing great." I'm a he-him male with no kids, and I still get teary-eyed just thinking about that episode. People will tell you that Bluey is a kid's show that adults can enjoy too. No, that episode wasn't for the kids. It was directed at all the moms watching who are doubting their motherhood. When has Cocomelon ever done something like this? All the babies stop singing mid-nursery rhyme, look directly into the camera and say, "Hey mom, just wanted to say you're doing a great job raising me. Keep up the good work." Like, no, that'll never happen. I'm still not done talking about how impressive the writing in Bluey is, okay? So please indulge me for a bit. I'm switching into video essay mode as we do a deep dive into the themes and symbolisms of one of my favorite Bluey episodes, Flatback. The entire episode is an allegory of human history told from a religious and scientific perspective, respectively. And it touches on the ever-growing relationships between a mother and child, all within 7 minutes. No, I'm not reading too deep into this. Let's begin. Bandit and Chili set out to build a new swing for their porch, and we get this great meta self-aware joke from Bandit when he complains about the instructions saying, I'm not taking advice from a cartoon dog. Meanwhile, the girls play games with the leftover packing materials that are thrown into the yard by their parents.
Bluey and Bingo are given bubble wrap, which they pretend is water, so they pretend they're fish. Then they're given cardboard, which they pretend is land, so they pretend they're frogs. Then they're given tails and become lizards, then T-Rexes, then birds, then furry little animals. Is this chart starting to look familiar? Then they're monkeys, and then bipedal cave dogs. What? Is that you, Mr. Darwin? Were these girls playing out the evolution of man through a silly game? Now, if you didn't like the evolution symbolism, I know you're going to love the parents being an allegory for the creators. You know, the big guy upstairs, the whatever you believe is going on. The parents supply the girls with their entire world. They give the girls the sea, the land, the volcanoes, and the trees. In these cave paintings the girls make that tell their history, they depict the parents as gods, higher up and in the clouds. They do look a little angry. Perhaps they're still in the Old Testament. The parents being the creators is hinted at again by Chili when she looks at the girls lovingly saying, "Aww,
we made them.
The parents give the girls an Allen wrench, aka tools, and one industrial revolution later, the girls evolve from cave dogs to modern dogs, building futuristic towns and spaceships. Throughout the episode, as the girls go through different stages of evolution, they also go through different stages of their lives as a mother and child. As fish, Bluey says that she's the mommy fish and Bingo is the baby. Then as frogs, Bingo pretends to be a toddler and Bluey teaches her how to catch flies. Then as T-Rexes, Bingo becomes a big girl. Then as cave dogs, she's a teenager. And finally, in the last stage, she's all grown up, ready to traverse the universe on her own. She thanks Bluey for looking after her and leaves on her spaceship. Bluey, now much older as shown by her having to use a cane, crosses the styrofoam threshold which represents her death and she gets to live with her creators. All while this orchestral masterpiece is playing and suddenly you realize you're crying? When did that start? And then Bandit ties the allegory all together at the very end saying, "Ah, this is heaven." Are you joshing me right now? This preschool show was able to tell a clever allegorical story with tasteful religious undertones in how many minutes? Did you just make me feel emotions over a cartoon dog? This isn't the only episode you can make an in-depth video essay on. There are plenty of other episodes that hit just as hard as this one. While I was doing research for this video, it got me thinking about another foreign animated kid show with 8-minute-long episodes that focus on a family of two toddlers. Except, unlike Bluey, this show is universally hated. Caillou, it's Caillou. I had this idea in my head that people only hated Caillou because he was a more accurate portrayal of a toddler. But in the handful of Caillou episodes I watched, I was reminded, oh no, that's why people hate Caillou. Because he sucks! His brattiness isn't even important to the plot, it comes out of nowhere. Caillou will be getting ready in the morning, he spills cat food and says, "Gilbert, look what you did. He's at the beach and this bird who's done nothing wrong gets told to go away. And there's a bunch more examples of Caillou being a whiny piece of shit. And I can't help but think that Caillou's screeching, piercing, whiny voice does not help him be a likable character. I bet real toddlers can be little punks sometimes, but why would you show that in your cartoon and not have him learn any lesson? There's never a lesson learned in Caillou. Since Caillou was a brat all the time, a lot of people, myself included, wondered why Caillou's parents never disciplined or even tried to change his bratty behavior. But after I thought about it, I realized it would be a very weird episode of Caillou if one day Caillou's mom was like, "Caillou, what did you do to your sister?"
"I made her look pretty, Mommy."
"Caillou, that was Mommy's expensive makeup! How many times do I have to tell you not to touch Mommy's things?" "Come here, you little twit!"
"Mommy, why are you hitting me?"
"Getting a spanking!"
"Mommy, you're hurting me!"
"I've had enough of you, Caillou! I hate you!"
That kid got what was coming to him.
I don't know, maybe that episode would be cathartic to some parents. Anyways, getting back to the actual best children's show ever, even though Bluey is literally the most mentally intelligent and educational show for the minds of children, teens, adults, and parents, some unnamed mouse company decided to censor some of the episodes on their platform. It's the strangest things that got censored, too. This horse pooping. Bandit getting hit in the groin. Bandit saying the word groin. This hitchhiker is no longer from Argentina. That one's kind of weird. This pretend cat saying it will pretend pee on the curtains. Bandit hinting at wanting to get snip snip down there. Adults, you know what I'm talking about. And the last 10 episodes of season 3, which are some of the deepest episodes in the series, aren't even on Disney Plus. But that could just be a licensing thing, I don't know. I kept waiting for the infertility episode. I heard so much about it. I finally got to the last episode on Disney Plus and thought, oh, okay, they're saving the deepest one for last. All right, let's do this. And the episode was about the family playing courtroom to determine if Bandit farted. I hope this video convinced you to give Bluey a chance. I mean, you're still here listening to a grown man talk about it, so you gotta be at least a little interested in it. Through its relatable and realistic portrayal of family life, the show has not only entertained, but also taught valuable life lessons to its viewers. The show's emphasis on play and family bonding is so refreshing to see compared to the usual fast-paced, mind-numbing shows aimed at kids. Bluey reminds us all the importance of spending time with loved ones and finding joy in the everyday. And if you still don't want to watch Bluey, have you thought about getting high and watching it? Thank you all so much for watching this episode of James getting obsessed over something he probably shouldn't be. Did you have a favorite part about this episode? Yeah, that was my favorite part too. Just one quick announcement. My newest Oddballs book is available on my website right now, so if you enjoyed the show, be sure to head over and reserve your copy today. It'll be full of new stories and illustrations and will be released on September 6th, and I'm super excited to hear what you all think of it. Anyway, thanks again for watching. Big shout out to my amazing team. They really crushed it this video, and you better be wearing your seatbelts. Today's video was sponsored by carrots. We're actually all right if you put other stuff on us. I wouldn't consider my parents health nuts, more like health kernels. They would never buy unhealthy snacks, but they wouldn't force me and my siblings to go outside and play because it was always burning hot. And we just licked the melted candy off the sidewalk anyways. They would never buy sugary cereal. The most sugary cereal my parents got was Honey Nut Cheerios. But my mom would mix the Honey Nut Cheerios with regular ones to make it more healthy or something. So I would start every day spending 15 minutes picking out the regular Cheerios from the cereal bowl. That's right, my parents didn't buy us cable, Cocoa Puffs, or candy. My life sucked. We were allowed to eat sugary cereal for one day out of the year, and that was on Christmas morning. It's a fun tradition, and we still do it to this day. As a kid, I would always get jealous when my friends would pull out their Lunchables and tell me how much their family ate out and all the sugary cereals they got to eat. Meanwhile, I had a PB&J sandwich on wheat bread with the crust still on, but it's okay because I like the crust. But now looking back, I'm just so grateful that my mom cared enough about my health to instill these healthy eating habits into me at a young age. I mean, I don't follow them anymore because I live on my own and I don't know how to cook and bagel bites taste so darn good, but I'm still thankful my mom taught me what I should be doing. Now, if there's any parents watching this going, I like the way this James's mom character thinks. Good. I would recommend to all parents that you should be teaching your kids healthy eating habits as soon as possible. I definitely didn't appreciate it at the time, but now that I'm older and wiser, I'm thankful that I like the taste of wheat bread. My parents had a saying, the wider the bread, the sooner you're dead. They would always get wheat bread. Even for hot dog and hamburger buns, they got wheat. Some of you might have had to use sandwich bread as hot dog buns. You're poor, I get it, but at least you didn't have to use wheat bread. However, now that I live on my own, I still get the wheat bread because I don't want to die young. I still have YouTube videos to make. Some things never change, I guess. Except I do get the white hot dog buns. The wheat ones are still gross. When I was a very little kid, my dad's work was throwing a barbecue get-together thing, and I got to eat as many hot dogs on white bread as I could handle. But the best part of it all was I got to wash it down with soda. Listen, I was very sugar-deprived back home. I had to catch up on all the sugar I was missing out on. I don't remember what the soda was exactly, but let's just say for the sake of this story, it was an original bottle of Coke from the 1800s. It might as well have had cocaine because I was addicted to all the white powdery stuff they added into that drink. Pretty soon, my tummy started to get the rumblies, and I had no idea what was causing it. So I told my dad, "Dad, my tummy hurts." And he said, "It's probably because you're dehydrated. Here, have some soda." And I still respected my dad at that age and thought he knew what he was talking about, so I drank more soda. And then I threw up and my dad said,
We should leave.
I mentioned this next story in my first book, available in bookstores near you. Be on the lookout for book number 2, coming out at the end of March. But one time my mom bought a giant 3-pound bag of Skittles. I forgot what she bought them for, but they definitely weren't for us. She locked them away in a closet because she knew what us kids would do if we got our grubby little hands on the Skittles. This wasn't the first time my mom had to hide candy from us, but this time she forgot to lock the closet, leaving the Skittles unprotected. And me and my older brother ate the entire thing, and we would have gotten away with it, but then something came up. Puke. I threw up on the family room carpet. My mom saw how rainbow the throw-up was and immediately put 2 and 2 together and knew that we had gotten into our Skittles. The funny part of this story is that my older brother got punished, but I didn't. Because according to my mom, I had already suffered enough. And that's why that story is in the chapter titled, Perks of Being the Younger Brother. Anyways, don't eat so much candy that you throw up. Okay, I'm going to be talking about M&Ms for a while, so to make it go faster, instead of saying M&Ms, I'm just going to say, In one of my older videos, I said that my favorite candy bar was and every time I would tell people that, they would always say, that's not a candy bar. I just can't do this anymore. But then something interesting happened. A year after that video was posted, actually released a bar version of their candy. So now I can absolutely say that is my favorite candy bar and not get any weird looks. Someone at the marketing team sent me a box of candy bars, and I think they wanted me to promote it, but because I said that M's are my favorite candy bar, whenever I go to a convention, sometimes you guys bring me candy, which is very thoughtful, but, you know, I like other things too, like Oreos and Twix and money. You know, I'm just saying you don't have to bring me all the time. When I was visiting London, I went to the store with my friends Adam and Mads, and if you don't know about the London store, it's 4 stories tall, 35,000 square feet, and according to Wikipedia, the largest sweet store in the world. So it was kinda big. Once I stepped inside, my first thought was, okay, this is too much. It was like the candy forest scene in Willy Wonka, except it was all chocolate and expensive. In one part of the store, you could make your own custom M's with a picture and 2 phrases. So for the picture, I googled my cartoon self, held up my phone to the camera, and it bloody worked, mate. And for the phrases, naturally we wanted to write something that was meaningful, so we wrote Mad Stinks and Adam Smells. But the employee didn't allow us to write that because it was too negative and went against the brand. So knowing we were not allowed to roast each other, the next phrases we decided to print was Get Mads and Something Else YT. It wasn't creative, but without being able to make fun of each other, we didn't have a lot to work with. But those phrases weren't allowed either, because they were the names of some YouTubers, so they got flagged by the system, and they told us, you'll need permission from the YouTuber, even though you're both right here. Listen, boys, I'm just a employee. I don't want to get sued. On one hand, I'm glad that has a system in place to prevent people from stealing, but on the other hand, it's just M's. What do you think we're going to do with them? So after 2 failed attempts at getting the phrase we wanted, we settled on getting Adam! And Mads! At least I still got my Cannonball Guy printed, even though technically this image is copyrighted, so you'll be hearing from my lawyers soon. One of the disadvantages of being a YouTuber is the lack of benefits. We don't even have dental. And with all the junk food I'm eating and the flossing I'm not doing, I should probably see one. Can I confess something? I didn't know dentists were optional. I thought they summoned you to their offices like jury duty. That's what it felt like when I was a kid. I've never gotten a cavity, though. At least not one that I know of. So at least I'm doing something right. Now comes the part of the video where I give you advice on eating healthy. But I'm still working on that myself. And when I don't know what to eat, I can't help but biting down on a delicious carrot. Carrots are the most popular vegetable in the world, having been nominated as the best orange thing ever. Use code ODDONE next time you purchase a carrot to get 5,000 free carrot points and a bunch of weird looks at the grocery store. Give your body the fuel it needs. You wouldn't pour soda in a car engine and expect it to run. Of course, that's not really the best metaphor to use because you also wouldn't pour water into a car and expect it to run. I guess everyone drink gasoline because cars and people are the same. But the point is, you've only got one body, so you should take care of it.
Boys and girls, come hear my greeting. I hope you don't plan on sleeping. Tonight, for while you are dreaming, evil awakes, unearthed and creeping. There's things that thump, things that bite, things that go bump in the night. What are these things you sit and ponder? Brace yourselves. We call them monsters.
What?
He's going to tell us about monsters, but they're not going to be that scary.
Silence, you dirty apparition! Don't you see the danger you are in? For what I speak is 100% real. Don't believe me? Just ask my pet eel.
This guy is nuts.
What?
I'm not an apparition. I'm a ghoul.
The first monster we'll see today is something that, likes to eat hay. First they champ, then they stamp, then... Okay, I can't speak in rhymes for the whole thing. I have a question for you guys. Are you familiar with the term furry?
What?
Well, after doing research on these monsters, I don't think furry is a new concept. Humans, for whatever reason, have always been obsessed with personifying animals. And who can blame them? Look how cute these guys are. Now, a lot of these monsters follow a similar pattern. So if you ever wanted to Frankenstein up a monster, all you have to do is take two already existing animals, one of them being preferably a human, and then you just gotta put them together. You all know about mermaids. One part sexy, the other half is just some lady. Well, do you know about this even scarier combination? It's called a hippo. Campus. Half hippo, half college. They say after 4 stressful years, he accumulates $100,000 of debt and no one in his field is hiring. Oh, I'm just messing with you guys. Okay, but for real, a hippocampus is a half fish, half horse.
Oh, like the Neopet.
What?
Yeah, Fiopian. I had one when I was like 2. I used my Christmas paintbrush on it.
You guys aren't scared of a literal seahorse?
Well, how does it kill people? Like, can it turn them into stone?
No, but the Scandinavians have a version called the Kelpie that tricks humans into riding them, and then it drowns the humans.
Probably should have started with that one.
That's... okay, I guess. Alright, Edward, if a murderous horse doesn't put you on edge, then how about this? A monopod. Yeah, that's right, it looks just like a regular person, but it only has one leg. Whoa, are you calling amputees monsters? No, this amputee has one giant leg. And by the way, these guys date back all the way to 400 BC, way before the first amputee ever existed. Also, despite them only having one leg, they're supposedly very fast, so imagine this guy aggressively chasing you at midnight. Yeah, I'm sure you'd piss your pants too. What about this? A blemmy. Again, looks like a regular person, but oh wait, where's its head? I don't see it anywhere. Oh, it's on its chest, like some kind of... Pokemon! Come on, does this not terrify you? How would you give this guy a hug without suffocating him?
My dad doesn't have a head. Also, he rides a horse, so this is all a pretty normal Tuesday for me.
Alright, it's fine that you're not scared, because I've been saving the best monsters for last. Everyone, meet the Serpopherd. It has the body of a lion, the head of a lion, but the neck of a snake.
Ugh, it's so gross. Why would anything need that long of a neck? So it can talk to giraffes?
Imagine if it could retract its neck, and then you just think it's a normal old lion and say, hey, that's pretty scary, but at least it's 20 feet away from me, and then its head would just extend out of its body and then bite your head off.
Speaking of snake-based creatures, what is the second most mischievous animal?
Answer, the snake. Snakes represent Slytherin from Harry Potter, and those guys are always up to something, and snakes were responsible for the fall of man. But do you know what the number one most mischievous animal is? Answer, the fox. He's been in a ton of fables. He's a master hustler. So the fox and the snake are two of the most mischievous animals. But what if they had a baby together? Well, take a look at this monster from Chile called the... I can't say it. The Jiravulu, there we go. It's a half fox, half snake, and it has a claw for a tail, and it also creates whirlpools to drown people. Now this would be a really cool monster if it wasn't so terrifying. You know what? I got even more snake-based monsters to show you. Take a look at the Amphisbaena.
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 That's it, right?
It's a half snake, half snake, but the same half. It's a snake with two heads on both ends for double biting action. I think it'd be cool if there was a creature that was the snake's tail on both sides. That'd be so useless. Oh wait, that's just an oversized worm. How would either one of them poop? Great question. I honestly don't know how a real snake poops. And the last snake-based monster I'm going to show you is called the Chelalita longicollis.
That's its Latin name. Its real name is the snake-neck turtle. It's a lot like the serpapard with its long neck, but instead a turtle. But I doubt you'll have to worry about these things. There's no way these abominations can be real. No, those are real.
Huh?
They're indigenous to Australia. I saw one at the zoo with my dad. There's no way these things can be real. No, they're definitely real. But do you know what isn't real? All of us. None of us are real, James. Why do you think we all have the same voice? You're talking to yourself again. It's been 3 weeks since the accident. You need to snap out of it. What are you guys talking about? You're totally real. So, did I scare you? Huh? You guys scared? Hey, you! Knock it off in there.
Hello, everyone. It's me, James. I just wanted to let you know that I'm launching this card game called Cafe Chaos on Kickstarter today. There'll be more info at the end of the video. This isn't some bit. I actually made a card game, and I worked really hard on it, so please click the link in the description to get your...
My name's Joe Exotic. I exploit dangerous wild animals for profit, and that's only the least reprehensible thing I've done. In this 8-part docuseries, I'll show you the bad, the horrible, and downright disgusting aspects of what it's like to be a polyamorous, meth-addicted Tiger King. I'm the real Pokemon Master, you hear?
And just like that, by watching other garbage humans on his television, James felt ever so slightly at peace while the world crumbled around him. For the first time in months, James smiled.
I'll be real with you, being in quarantine has sucked a lot. I miss hanging out with friends, I miss going to non-essential businesses, and I miss wiping my butt with toilet paper instead of my dog. All I've had for company has been Floof and my own mind. So it's been a little hard to stay motivated during this time. But if staying home instead of going to Disneyland will save people's lives, then I guess I'll have to make that sacrifice. It's so hard to be a good person. Some of the things that have been helping me mentally has been exercise, a positive mindset, and garbage television. I used to think that garbage television was stupid and a waste of my mortal existence. But as I started watching more garbage, I realized that I've already been fascinated and enjoyed watching garbage content for years. Have you seen the videos I make? I've said this in my conspiracy video, that I love watching crazy people talk for hours. Now take those same people, give them a camera crew and a budget, and you got a brand new show on TLC. What's that? You've never heard of TLC, the Learning Channel? Well, TLC is full of wonderful programs and documentaries that'll teach you if you become trashy enough, you'll end up on TV. And that's what schools should be teaching. No, this video isn't sponsored by TLC, but if they wanted to sponsor me, I'd say no. I just want to be on an episode of My Strange Addiction. I'll tell you what the addiction is later, TLC. One show I've been unhealthily binging is called 90 Day Fiancé. It's about when a boy meets a girl, or a girl meets a girl, or a man meets a much younger girl online, and they sort of like each other, but they're from different countries, so when they meet each other, they have 90 days to decide if they want to get married before their visa expires. It's great that the internet exists so that these clearly desperate people in different countries even have the chance to form a relationship. And it's equally great that the internet exists so we can watch very personal moments of these strangers' lives. The show really shines with the most garbage of couples. I've seen other YouTubers talk about this one specific couple, Big Ed and Rose. I don't want to make fun of Big Ed's appearance, but let's just say he saves a lot of money on scarves. And turtle necks. He's a 54-year-old pursuing a relationship and wanting to marry a 23-year-old Filipino woman named Rose. And Ed has a daughter that's 6 years older than Rose. And he's older than Rose's father. Can you imagine for a second if your mom was 6 years younger than you? And on top of that, Ed is a huge liar. He lied about his height, he lied about wanting to have kids with her, he's also really mean to Rose. I mean, sure, he's old enough to be her father, so he's probably used to talking down to young people, and a dad telling their kids that their legs are hairy and their breath stinks is justifiable, but this is his girlfriend! At least make her a bag lunch first. Even if I thought Big Ed was the best guy in the world, do I think a relationship could work between people with a 31-year age gap?
Well, let's take a look at the math. Here is the half your age plus 7 rule graphed out. So if you're 30, then it's socially acceptable to be dating someone who's 22. Now, obviously, this graph isn't set in stone. But for reference, here's Big Ed's age versus Rose's age. So when Ed was 40 and taking care of his 15-year-old daughter, Rose was 9.
So do I think an age gap of 31 can work? Well, mathematically and common sense speaking, not until Ed is 76 and Rose is 45. I think that'll take longer than 90 days, though. The second and third reason I love this show is David and Lana. I haven't seen any YouTubers talk about this couple, but they need to. Meet David, a 60-year-old guy from Vegas who's fallen head over wallet for a Ukrainian woman named Lana. He spent 7 years and $250,000 on a relationship where he hasn't even met the other person. He's tried to meet up with Lana on 3 separate occasions already, but got stood up every single time. Now he's putting all of his credit cards on the table and is willing to risk it all on a fourth trip to the Ukraine to meet his soon-to-be mail-order...
Наречена.
Who doesn't speak English. Long story short, they meet after 13 episodes, David gives her a brand new iPhone X to text him on, only for him to get eternally ghosted because her nails were too long to text him back. Let me remind you that they were in contact for 7 years. That's how old Rose was when Ed was 38. Me briefly describing these two's relationship just now was so much of an emotional roller coaster that I don't even need to go back to theme parks anymore. It makes me want to puke, and I hope you can see why I love this show so much. I know that reality TV is fake, and who knows if this entire relationship was scripted and manufactured for the show, but I don't care if it's fake. This smile is real. Watching garbage television all day isn't as fun or healthy as it may seem, believe it or not. Even though I spent a good portion of this video hyping up trash TV, you should also be doing something productive. Like watching YouTube videos. To compensate for all the garbage I watch, I've been exercising more. Right when the pandemic began its exponential spike, I bought a home gym machine and I've been working out 3 times a week with my friend DJ. DJ and I met because we're both friends with Alan Becker, who makes these animations versus animator videos, and one day I noticed that DJ's muscles were a lot like one of my Japanese animes. He was a walking, breathing protagonist that my body dysmorphia had been holding me back from becoming. I reached my skinny hands out to DJ and said, "Hey DJ, can we work out together?"
So this is where I put the iPad to talk to DJ.
Oh, hey James.
This is where I got the treadmill, the weights, and this is my favorite piece of equipment. This rag up here so I don't bump my head when I do pull-ups. This is where I keep my air conditioner because it gets very hot in this garage. This is what it used to look like a month ago. Anyway,
the reason I started working out more seriously was because people were calling me skinny and other slanderous synonyms like slender and scrawny, and I told my friends that I was hurt by these comments, but they all unanimously agreed that it's true, I am a slim Jim. It's important to have a reason for working out. Mine is self-loathing. DJ is forcing me to push myself. We've only been going for about 3 months, or a whole 90-day fiancé, and I've already gone from struggling to lift up this much weight to struggling to lift up this much weight. Sorry if I'm flexing too much on you, I'm just proud of my progress. The point is, while trash TV is fun, remember to mix in some productive activities during the day. For example, exercise. You don't need equipment. Do 10 push-ups right now, loser. Clean up after yourself. During these hard times, keeping your space organized and tidy will be a big boost on your mental health. Wear a face mask if you need to go out. Learn how to cook. You should also be eating healthy too. Stop eating so many bagel bites. Watch parkour fails. Remind yourself how safe you are inside. These guys could get COVID and a broken tooth. Wear a face mask if you need to go out. Shave your head. Who cares anymore? Watch competitive sports fishing and get your blood pressure to rise so much that you feel pressured into working out again. And oh my god, how big is that fish? Oh my god, it's a 1,200-pound bull shark! They need 7 people to pull it on the boat and... Oh my god, is that Big Ed?!
I'm sort of stealing this idea from Jaden Animations.
Wait, no, that's not right. I'm not stealing it. I'm plagiarizing it.
Jaden did a video talking about random thoughts she had, and you should all go watch it. And I thought, hey, I think randomly sometimes. So Jaden, is it alright if I make a video about my random thoughts? I hope you say yes, because I just did. What is happiness? Well, it's a chemical in your brain. And how do you get that chemical? Well, it's just a little something I like to call drugs. I think humans make fun of hairless animals way too much. We think that all hairless animals are ugly. Just go to Google Images and type in hairless animal, and you'll probably think the animals you see there are ugly as well. But we all seem to forget that we're hairless animals too. If anything, other animals should think that we're ugly. So I look at this phenomenon and I have a theory. I think we humans find things covered in hair more cute. We're more attracted to things covered in hair. And that's why I'm a furry. My dad never taught me how to shave, and one time I cut myself shaving right above my lip, and for the rest of the day, all I could smell was blood. I don't know why I mentioned the dad part. You know how websites will ask you to type in a bunch of misshapen letters to make sure you're not a robot? That's called a CAPTCHA. And some of those CAPTCHAs are impossible. Sometimes I look at a CAPTCHA and think, am I a robot? I just wanted to send some email. I didn't want to question my identity. I wasn't ready for an existential crisis, Club Penguin. Sorry, that joke is dead. Just like Club Penguin. So here's the random thought. What if we lived in a robot society and robots had to prove that they weren't human to make a Facebook account? I think their CAPTCHA would be an optical illusion. Like, to sign into a website, it'll show two lines and say, prove you're not a human, which line is bigger? Optical illusions are like CAPTCHAs for people. Every time you paint a room, it gets a little bit smaller. And if it takes you one can of paint to paint an entire room, then the room gets smaller by one can of paint. You brought a can of paint inside the room, and you never took it out. Every time you smell something, molecules from that thing get sucked up into your nose, and that's how you're able to smell it. So that means every time you smell something, it gets a tiny bit lighter. Do archaeologists have lingo and jokes that only other archaeologists will understand? Like, there's a whole other world of jokes that I won't get to experience because I'm not an archaeologist. Like, one day, two archaeologists could be digging a hole, and one says, I'm not finding anything! And then the other guy says, well, you know what they say in the archaeology business. And I don't know what they say because I'm not an archaeologist. How about we look up jokes for archaeologists? Why did Robin Hood pull out of the archery contest? He found it an arrowing experience. Okay, get that one? It just wasn't that funny. Nor was it about archaeology. Or maybe it was, and I just don't get it. We'll never know. Where did Caesar keep his armies? Up his sleeveys. Okay, I had to get this one explained to me, but armies is supposed to be your arm, like your body arm, and your armies go up your sleeveys. Get it? Except Julius Caesar wore a toga, so he didn't even have sleeves. And you could just say this about anyone who had an army. Where did Hitler keep his armies? Up his sleeveys! Ha 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 ha! When you ask someone what time it is, sometimes they'll say, it's a quarter to blank. And first off, I really hate that way of telling time, because now I have to use math just to know what time it is. Someone will say, it's a quarter to eight. Okay, so a quarter to eight, well, a quarter is 25, so 8 minus 25, it's like negative 13. Wait, no, we're using time numbers, so a quarter of 60, that's like 10 minutes, so 8 minus 60 over 4, you carry the 2, and... Oh, it's 8 o'clock now. We usually only say it's a quarter to when referring to whole numbers, but I wish people would use other times, like, hey, what time is it? Oh, it's a quarter to 8:37. Did you know that mosquitoes prefer type O blood more than any other blood type? Does that mean our blood tastes different? How can mosquitoes sense what blood type we are? Do mosquitoes think we come in different flavors? What if there was a restaurant for mosquitoes and the menus just had our blood types? Are there mosquito snobs? Like one mosquito would say, oh, I see you're drinking O negative. Of course you'd like that blood. Everyone likes that blood. I got that whole idea from a conversation I had with Jaden, and I said I was going to use it in my Random Thoughts video, so I'm just stealing everything from Jaden. You know what I think would be a funny contradiction? A fedora with a Tumblr logo on it. Whenever you leave for a trip, people will say, drive safe, which is fine. I always appreciate safe driving tips, but when you go flying in an airplane, sometimes people will say, have a safe flight, but I literally have no control if the plane flies safely or not. Why are you telling me to fly safe? I should be the one telling the pilot that. Hey, I just wanted to say that a lot of my friends are counting on you, so you better not screw this up. I appreciate the sentiment, but how do I fly unsafe? Maybe go on my phone before we take off, not watch the safety video? Blow the plane up? Why do people care so much about fashion? If I bought some really nice clothes and I go to a party, out of everyone in that room, I'm the only one who can't see what I'm wearing, unless I look down the entire time. I can go to a party and be wearing just a bunch of clown makeup, and as long as there's no mirrors around and everyone plays it cool, I would have no idea that I'm wearing anything. And also, it doesn't matter what I'm wearing, because I look good in everything. I think this whole YouTube thing has given me a confidence boost. I wouldn't say it's an unhealthy amount, but it's given me confidence that I didn't have in high school. My parents bought me a Pokemon shirt for Christmas, and yeah, I like Pokemon, but I don't want the whole world to know that. And in high school, I wouldn't have worn any remotely geeky shirt. But now I can go outside and not even realize that I'm wearing my Pokemon shirt. And when I do realize, I usually think, huh, that's embarrassing. I'm the odd ones out, who cares? When my parents were my age, they already had a child. And here I am. wearing a Pokemon shirt. You know how different states in America will have different names for certain things? Like some states call it pop instead of soda, or how they call it a washroom instead of a bathroom, and apparently in Rhode Island they call a water fountain a bubbler, and everywhere else is just normal. Anyway, once I heard that down south, there's a phrase for when it's raining and the sun is still out. And that phrase is, the devil meeting his wife. Oh, isn't that so sweet? That means anyone can find happiness, even the devil. I love it when we give the devil more innocent and human characteristics. And given how few of times it rains in Arizona, I don't get to use that phrase very often. So already when it's raining, it's like, woo, it's raining! This day is gonna be great! But then when the sun's out, I get to say, look guys, the devil's meeting his wife! I hope they're happy together. Unfortunately, I misheard what that phrase was when I learned it. It's not the devil meeting his wife, it's actually the devil beating his wife. So I guess they're not happy together. I was so sad when I learned what it actually was. I don't know who this devil's wife is, but you need to find a new man, dude. And to think, I almost thought of you as an alright guy, Satan. I looked up that saying on Wikipedia, and in Tennessee they say, the devil is kissing his wife. So I guess in Tennessee, the devil's romantic, but everywhere else he just can't stand her. And the worst variation I could find has to be what they say in France. In France, when it rains and the sun's out, they say, the devil is beating his wife and marrying his daughter. Whoa, France! I'd expect that sort of behavior from Tennessee, but not you, France! Why do you have to be so dramatic to describe your weather? I don't want to even know what you call snowstorms. So anyway, those were my random thoughts. I swear I don't do drugs.
Do you all remember that classic kids movie made in the 70s about a pig and a spider? Yeah, Charlotte's Web? Remember how it made us a lot of money? I mean, remember how it ended on a cliffhanger?
What was he talking about?
I didn't think it was a cliffhanger. Yeah! Big cliffhanger! It's been 30 years! Everyone wants to know what happened to that spider!
The spider died, Ethan.
Oh, I didn't watch it. But you got one thing right. Everyone is wondering what happened next. The first movie wasn't satisfying enough. America needs a sequel.
Who would watch that?
And then 3 years later, we can make a live-action version! Now you're speaking my language, Ethan! Everyone else, you're fired! For some reason, movie producers and showrunners think that kids are stupid and don't know what good content is. They probably think that as long as a kid's show is a cartoon and it's moving, they'll love it. Well, here's the truth, Hollywood. The cartoons don't have to move. But you do need to write likable characters in a plot that actually makes sense. The only people who know what kids like these days are YouTubers. Am I right, fellow youths? Hashtag let Pokemon go to the polls! I thought I had pretty low standards as a kid, but sometimes I'd be watching a show and even I'd think, this is weird. Why does this need to exist? Why are the animals singing? One of my favorite shows growing up was Yu-Gi-Oh! Anyway, because I'm an adult, I bought and framed 3 Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards.
And dang it, these cards are too small to even fit in the frame.
I don't even know why I liked Yu-Gi-Oh! So much. It was basically just anime characters playing the exact same card game over and over. Yu-Gi-Oh! Would be losing, he would give a speech about friendship or the heart of the cards, and then he would draw the Yu-Gi-Oh! Must Win card. And most of the time, he wouldn't even play by the rules. And then rinse and repeat that formula for 200 more episodes and 4 spin-offs, and you got yourself a successful anime. I think Yu-Gi-Oh! Was the first sign that gaming channels were gonna be a thing. Kids just love watching other people play games. Because they suck at them. Okay, enough about Japanese cartoons. If Yu-Gi-Oh! Was able to keep my hyperactive attention span engaged, then what TV shows did I think were weird even as a kid? Keep in mind that these opinions are coming from someone who thought the Star Wars prequels were good. So, Misa take it with a grain of salt. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. To be fair, I've never seen a single episode of TMNT. From what I hear, it's a good series, but just the concept by itself was enough for my kid brain to think, this show is silly and I'm not gonna watch it. Like, come on. Ninja Turtles? That's a little weird, seeing that turtles are slow and aren't very maneuverable.
Help, I'm a turtle and I can't get up!
They're mutants? Okay, I guess that makes sense. And they're teenagers? Teenagers are mean to me. This is where I draw the line. Those are 3 adjectives that don't belong in a sentence together. And they're named after famous Renaissance artists? Why don't you just give them normal turtle names, like Sheldon. Whatever. Let's go watch a real show about Japanese people playing card games. I used to think that the Powerpuff Girls was a girly TV show, and so I never watched it. But then the show got rebooted, and everyone on the internet was saying how much they used to love the original, and all I could think was, Man, if only I wasn't a sexist baby. Do you guys remember Zaboomafoo? Zaboomafoo was the show on PBS Kids where a lemur and these two brothers named the Krat Brothers would teach kids all about wild animals. I always thought that the two brothers were named the Krap Brothers, and I only just learned their real names right now when I looked up how to spell Zaboomafoo. Also, they have a website, and it looks like this. Anyway, one of the episodes was all about eggs. The Krap Brothers talked all about the different kinds of eggs animals lay, and then the lemur asks,
"What's it like to be in an egg?"
And then one of the Krap Brothers just appears in a giant egg and says, It's pretty squishy and gooey in here. And he brought a pizza with him.
Pizza!
I watched that episode as a kid and had two questions. One, how'd he get inside the egg? And two, what laid him? The more I thought about it, the weirder I felt. This is how fetishes start, PBS. Can you believe my brother is inside this egg? Now, when I think back to movies I thought were weird as a kid, the first thing that comes to mind were those freaking American Mouse Tail ones. They're about these mice trying to immigrate to America. Good luck doing a 2017 reboot. Also, I have to talk about all those bad Disney sequels. They're all bad. Don't tell me, oh, I thought The Little Mermaid 2 was alright. No, they're all bad. My least favorite one was The Hunchback of Notre Dame 2. I remember one time I watched both movies back to back, and just having seen the first movie, and then seeing the opening scene in the second one, I thought, what is this? This should be called The Hunchback of Notre Dame. I know those Disney sequels were just an easy way for Hollywood to make money, but think about how much more money they could have made if they just made good sequels. There was this one movie called Quest for Camelot. And as a kid, I liked this movie. It wasn't on my top 10, but it was alright. There was this one griffin who I thought looked cool and had a funny voice.
Precisely.
However, there's one part in the movie, and if you've already seen this movie, you probably know what I'm going to talk about, where a two-headed dragon sings a song about wanting to be separated from the other dragon. There's a lot of things wrong with this song. I don't want to go too in-depth, but at one part they dress up as Cher and Elvis for some reason, except kids who watch this are too young to know or care about these people, and any adults watching this with their kids are just thinking, this is uncomfortable. Keep in mind that it takes a team of people to animate something like this. This song had to go through multiple, well-paid, professional songwriter people, and they all had to look at the scripts and go, yeah, this is definitely a good idea. The last movie that I suppressed was Charlotte's Web 2. Wilbur's Great Adventure. I don't think enough people are talking about this movie. I thought the first one was a classic story about a pig who cheats death because a nerd spider took pity on him. Also, I just want to talk about this one scene in the first movie where Wilbur found out the farmers were going to kill him, so he started crying, I don't want to die.
I don't want to die! I don't want to die!
I know this pig isn't even real, but that scene was the closest thing to turning me vegan. The sequel is exactly what you'd expect from a sequel made 30 years after the original to be. They did change the character design a lot. I guess all these celebrities are still doing plastic surgery. Look what they made Charlotte look like in the sequel. The reason I bring up this movie is because of a scene towards the end. So this one character just can't fit in with all the other farm animals. He's a black sheep. Literally, they made him a black sheep. He was doomed to be an outcast from the start. And then a fox has a musical number, attacks the farm, and then goes after the black sheep.
The other white meat.
But he doesn't kill and eat the black sheep right there, no. Instead, he sheep naps the sheep and takes him to an abandoned house, as any fox would do. And then, I don't know if I'm interpreting this the wrong way, but watching this scene, I was picking up some creepy, non-advertiser-friendly vibes. The fox is basically telling the sheep, oh yeah, I'm gonna eat ya. I'm gonna eat ya, oh yeah. I'm gonna put you in my mouth. Just eat him already! Stop licking your lips! Look what he does with his tail, and tell me you're not picking up some sexual tension! There's even a part where the sheep started to run away, but then the fox dragged him back down. Where you think you're going, sheep boy? I'm going to be a furry. If you're weirded out by this, don't worry. I was too. And also, we're all done. Those were all the movies and shows that weren't too far suppressed down for me to tell you about. I asked a friend what movies weirded them out as a kid, and they said The Hunchback of Notre Dame. What are you talking about? That was a great movie. Get on my level, scrub. I used to watch foxes seduce their meals before they vored them.
James, you said you were going to make a Teacher's Part 2! I didn't subscribe to fake news!
I know. Don't worry, I'll do that next video.
But right now we're doing this. So my friend Your Movie Sucks, great channel, over 500,000 subs, asked me and a bunch of other YouTubers if we could talk about a movie that scared us as a kid. Now, growing up, I wasn't allowed to watch scary movies. I remember one time my parents were watching a movie downstairs, and I went down to see what all the noises were about, and my mom said, "Oh no, honey, you can't watch this, it's too scary." And then years later, I learned that the movie they were watching was Jurassic Park. I think I could have handled it, Mom. I don't know if you could tell by the length of this video, but it's going to be pretty different than the videos that I usually post. But I think it's good to try out new things, and hopefully we'll all have a fun time listening to me talk about this movie. Because, folks, I'm excited to share with you the movie that traumatized me most as a kid. And that movie is, drumroll please, is, you already read the title, The Dark Crystal. Okay, so The Dark Crystal came out in 1982, 14 years before I was even born. This movie was made for a whole different generation of people, but somehow I still saw it. I don't remember how I saw it, my family didn't own it on VHS, and I forget how old I was exactly, but let's say for the sake of this video, I saw this movie when I was 17. Because that's legally still a child. This movie was directed by Frank Oz and freaking Jim Henson. Jim Henson is the creator of, I don't know if you've heard of this, but The Muppets? You might have seen them before. There's no denying that Jim Henson was a very talented man when it came to puppets, and the work he did on The Dark Crystal is amazing. As much as I'm about to talk this movie down, it's honestly a work of art. The most enjoyment I got rewatching it was just the artistic appreciation of the character design, the scenery, the costumes, and most importantly, the puppetry. Some of the puppetry was amazing. Like this shot. How'd they do that without CGI? And did I mention that there's no people in this film? Except for full body shots, then they just used a real person dressed up and had them not face the camera. But as I rewatched The Dark Crystal, I realized that the movie was kinda garbage. So instead of talking about the parts of the movie that scared me as a child, I'm gonna be talking about why this movie was pretty bad. So now this video just turned into one of those bad movie review videos, but honestly, I like watching other people talk about bad movies, like The Room and Birdemic and... oh, what was that other one? I can't quite put my paw on it. For this video, I ended up doing some research, something I don't normally do for videos, and oh man, is this rabbit hole deep. Jim Henson had a bunch of ideas for the world of The Dark Crystal, but wasn't able to fit all of his ideas into 90 minutes of film. And because he didn't explain the rules of the world well enough, the movie suffered. It felt unfinished and unstarted. Basically, the movie didn't leave you wanting more, it just left you thinking... wait, what? Some of you might be thinking, well, James, it's just a kid's movie. Kids are dumb. Why are you analyzing a kid? Shut up. Brian Froud, one of the head artists of the movie, even said that when we finished the film, we knew that we had only seen a fragment of this other world. Bad fragment, I guess. So even the creators of this movie felt that they left out a lot of stuff. So in 2012, a three-part comic book was published to be as a prequel to the movie, and I bought and read all three of them. And I will say that they did do a better job explaining the world that Jim Henson had in mind, but you shouldn't have to read a book before you see a movie.
Especially since the books weren't available until after the movie came out.
In the movie, stuff happens for no reason. Like in one scene, the main character... this is Jen, the main character, by the way. Get used to looking at this guy's face. I've done so much digging and research into this world that I'm completely desensitized by how weird this puppet looks. If you think this puppet looks creepy, you should have seen some of his earlier designs. Just be thankful this is what you ended up with. So in this scene, Jen is trying to pick out which of the crystal shards is the right one that he needs for his quest. And what does he do to find the right one? That's right, he plays his flute, and then the right shard he needed just glows. Wouldn't you do that too if you were in the same situation? This movie doesn't explain why the crystal likes his music, it doesn't come up later, it just happens. That's basically this whole movie. Things happening slowly. So here we go, children. Hold my hand as I take you on a magical journey, but not too magical that it doesn't make sense. That is The Dark Crystal. The plot. It starts with a narrator telling us that there's this world and that it's dying. By the way, this world is named Thra. They don't mention it once in the movie, but in the prequels and in the Wikipedia article, they all called it Thra. Okay. Thra is dying because this one crystal, this one, cracked. How? I don't know. I mean, I do know because I read the prequels, but this movie doesn't tell us. Are you still with me? Good, we're not even a minute in. Because this crystal cracked, two new species were born. The cruel Skeksis, the bad guys, and the gentle Mystics, the good guys. And both species are dying. Now, I'm no biologist, but I think they're probably dying because there's no woman. That would wipe out a species pretty quickly, I'd think. Instead of having women, the Skeksis use the crystal to make them young again. Maybe. It's either the crystal or the sun.
So too they learn to draw new life from the sun.
Okay, so then what do you need the crystal for? Now we see the good creatures, the Mystics, and with the Mystics lives another creature called a Gelfling.
It's like an elfling, but with a G. You may remember him from earlier. He's naked now, but meet your protagonist, Jen. This movie makes up so many words. Just try and keep up.
And a journey must begin. The journey of Jen.
Okay, that's a little pretentious movie. All right, let's tone it down a little. Then we see that the Emperor Skeksis is dying, oh no. And then we get the second scariest scene in the whole movie. Yeah, we're not even 15 minutes in and we're at the part that gave me nightmares. Then the mystic that's basically Jen's dad is also dying, and he tells Jen that he needs to find the cracked piece of the crystal, the shard, and then he just needs to plop that sucker back in the crystal where it belongs. And then boom, boom, the world is saved. Again, they don't explain why doing this would save the world. Like, they could have at least tried to make something up, like once the crystal is fixed, woman will appear. Jen's dad tells him to
follow the greater sun for a day to the home of Ogre.
Now, I'm no astronomer, but I think following the sun for a day would just make you go in a circle. What am I supposed to do when it's noon? Now the Skeksis, they're like, oh well dang it guys, who's going to be our new emperor? This Skeksis named Chamberlain.
It's time to make my move.
Who is my second favorite character in this whole movie, thinks that he should be emperor. I mean, who wouldn't want to be emperor of like 8 other bird monsters? The way that you can remember that this Skeksis is Chamberlain is that every time he's on camera, he says this. Hey man, you can't be emperor, says the Skeksis. Oh yeah? Fight me for it, replied Chamberlain. Since these two are puppets and don't have lower bodies, they can't actually fight each other, which is super disappointing. So instead, the two have a competition to see who can hit a rock the hardest, because that's how you tell who's fit to lead. You can't have someone be your emperor when they can't even hit a rock that hard. Anyway, Chamberlain loses, and all the other Skeksis banish him and rip up his clothes. Okay, now hold on. Do you see what's funny about this screenshot? This Skeksis is wearing glasses, meaning in this universe, optometrists exist, and this Skeksis had to go through an eye exam to get his prescription. Do you like number one or number two? Does anyone else think that's funny? No? Alright. Anyway, after the Skeksis banish Chamberlain, they see in the crystal that there's this Gelfling just walking around. Man, I didn't know the crystal could snitch like that. So they send out these crab monsters to get him. And by the way, those crab monsters are called Garthams, and they are created by this handsome Skeksis. You'd know that if you read the Wikipedia article. Anyway, back to Jen. What's he up to?
I'm not ready to go alone. Alright. Alone, then.
Took you long enough. Jen is supposed to follow the sun to Agura's house? Agura's? He runs into her and she's this old hag who tells him that the three suns are going to line up soon and when that happens, the world might end. Or it will begin. She doesn't know.
I know because I've already seen this movie.
She also, for some reason, has a box of crystals. One of them is the shard that Jen is looking for, but she doesn't know which.
Which one is it?
Don't know.
So Jen narrows down the box of crystals to three shards.
It's one of these three, I'm sure.
What? No, you've never even seen the dark crystal. How do you know it's one of those? Whatever, okay, I can roll with this. Then, if you remember, Jen gets the idea to play his flute at the shard, and then the correct shard just glows for some reason. Why does the crystal react to flute music? That's not a thing. Crystals don't have ears. Now, when you create a fantasy world, you can't explain everything. Sometimes the answer is just, oh, it's magic. In Frozen, they don't explain how Elsa got her ice powers. She was just born with it, okay? It's magic. And the audience is all okay with it, as long as they don't take it too far. But this movie just tries to pull off so much stuff that doesn't make sense. There's a line, and this movie crosses it multiple times. Then the crab people attack Agura's house, Jen escapes with a shard, boom, next day. Okay, I know I've been talking bad about this movie, but the amount of detail in this forest scene is pretty amazing. I mean, it's not doing anything to drive the plot forward, but I just think it's cool to look at. Anyway, back to review mode. Jen falls in the mud, what an idiot, and then he meets up with the... Oh jeez, that's a girl! That's a girl! So there's a girl Gelfling now, her name is Kira.
I'll take a potato chip and eat it.
She's speaking gibberish.
And
then for some unexplained, unimportant reason, when they touch hands, they share memories. I mean, I don't know exactly what happens when you touch hands with another woman. I'm not entirely sure, but I don't think that's supposed to happen.
What's happening?
We're dream fasting, sharing our memories.
I'm having a bath.
Okay, three things.
First, this seems like a plot device-y way to just throw in some backstory, but whatever. Second, Jen, you just found out that you're not the last of your species, and when you realize that you're sharing memories with her, you decide to show this person you just met you having a bath. I mean, I guess she did show you her mom dying, so let's just get all that personal stuff out of the way. And third, somewhere on Earth, there exists a baby naked Jen puppet, and I need to have it. Then we're introduced to my third favorite character, Kira's dog, Fizzgig. He doesn't really add anything to the story, he's just that lovable pet slash side character. Hey, that's a lot like my dog.
Hey, puppy!
Also, Kira can talk to animals. Okay. Then we're treated to this really great scene. A whole 2 minutes of the Skeksis eating. But honestly, though, I kinda love this scene. It does a great job creeping me out. Okay, it does go on for a minute too long, but bear with me here. The Skeksis' clothing and silverware are Victorian, so it gives off a haunted mansion sort of vibe. And just the character design and the way the Skeksis are eating, it just comes off as unnerving. A lot of movies' scary parts are jump scares or gore. At least I think they do that. I'm not allowed to watch scary movies. But this is such a different way to unease an audience. It kind of reminds me of the first half of a Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared video. Nothing necessarily scary is happening, but it's still able to make the audience feel uncomfortable. Basically, the whole point of this scene was that the crab people were like, hey, we got this old hag, but we didn't get the Gelfling. And then the Skeksis were like, wow, okay, release the crystal bats.
Crystal bats, fly! Search the land, search the water, search the sky!
Okay, this might be nitpicking, and I'm no Gelfling expert, but I think you can rule out searching the sky. I don't see too many Gelflings just flying around. So one of the bats finds Jen and Kira. They go back to Kira's village. Jen doesn't even know where he's supposed to take the shard. His dad never told him what to do after he got the shard. He tells Kira about his quest and what Algura told him.
You know the three suns in the sky? They're going to come together soon. It's called the great something or other.
See, even Jen doesn't remember these made-up names. Really would have been convenient if you told her this information when you were sharing memories. So then the crab monsters show up and basically murder and capture Kira's whole family. Yeah, it was pretty traumatizing. And right when the crab monsters are about to attack Jen and Kira, Chamberlain comes out of nowhere. Remember the guy? He steps in between them and stops the attack. And Kira and Jen escape because Chamberlain saved them. Oh, and then Jen throws away the shard. Boom, next day. Kira finds the shard that Jen threw, and then the two find some hieroglyphics about a prophecy. It says a Gelfling is gonna save the world and kill all the Skeksis, it doesn't matter. And then, oh, Chamberlain shows up! Hey, Chamberlain! Hey, guys, I'm sorry for killing your entire species. We just didn't want the prophecy to come to fruition. You understand, right? So what if we all go to the castle together, we can eat some food, and just have a gay old time and talk this whole thing over? What do you think? And then he says, please, a lot.
Please, please, please. Please, yes, please.
Now how can you say no to this lovable guy? He just got kicked out of the Skeksis Club, he's all alone, he just saved you from some crab monsters, and he did say please a lot. I'm just saying, if I was Jen, I totally would have trusted Chamberlain 100%. But instead, Jen just stares at him blankly, and then Kira ruins everything and tells Jen not to trust him, and then they run away.
Wait! Please make peace!
Eh, might have been the right call. So then, for some reason, Kira knows where the castle is, and since she can talk to animals, she calls up these things called Landstriders. They're just a person walking on four stilts, and they ride the Landstriders all the way to the castle. I have a lot of problems with this next scene. So one of the Skeksis takes a podling that they just captured, locks it into a chair, and tells the podling that they're gonna suck its essence away and make it a slave.
Won't hurt. We just want to drain your living essence. Then you can be the same as the other podlings here. A slave.
You know, the podlings don't speak English. They speak a whole different language. The Skeksis is just talking gibberish to this guy while he's just locked in a chair like, what's going on? Like, none of what you're saying is going through this guy's head. And so only the Emperor can drink the essence, and that will make him stay young forever. So what do you need the sun for? And also, what killed the last Skeksis? Looked like old age to me. Yeah, no, that's cool and all, but we get the most terrifying scene in the whole movie. That's right, this is the winner. You gave me the most nightmare scene. You win $1 million. Congratulations, scene! I can go on for hours about how this part of the movie gave me nightmares, but honestly, it speaks for itself. I think what made it worse was that the podling was tied down to the chair and he was just so helpless and his whole face melted off and just... ugh! But now that I'm older, all I can think is, what do you guys need slaves for? So far, the only thing slaves have done was pull on a rope to make some swords appear out of the ground and bring you guys a plate of food. Why is there such a high demand for slaves that you need to make new ones? What do you guys even do all day? Then Kira and Jen arrive at the castle. They see the crab people taking in the pod people from Kira's village. They try and save the podlings, but completely fail. The Landstriders die immediately. Jen and Kira open the cage that the podlings are in, and then the two get cornered. And what are they going to do, you ask? Well, isn't it obvious? They're going to jump and slowly float down to safety because Kira has wings. That never came up in the memory sharing bit. So I guess when the Skeksis told the Crystal Bats to search for the Gelflings in the sky, they weren't that far off. Hey, Kira, sorry we left your whole family back there. We totally didn't save them, like, at all. They're probably going to get turned into slaves now. Okay, we're almost done, everyone. We're getting to Climax Town. Jen and Kira sneak into the castle. Chamberlain's there. He basically murders Jen. And since he captured a Gelfling, he's not an outcast anymore. You guys should have just went with him the first time. Now two Landstriders are dead. Kira goes into the slave room, and as a kid, I was already so traumatized the first time seeing a podling get turned into a slave, and now seeing Kira getting her essence taken away, I lost my mind. Oh, shoot! Kira's getting turned into a slave! Ah! Luckily, remember the old hag, Agura? She's like, yo, you can talk to animals. Just ask them to help you. Oh, okay.
Come on, Leo!
She breaks free, and the animals push the Skeksis that was in the room down this pit, and that kills them. Leading up to this point, it's hinted that the Skeksis and the Mystics are, like, connected. When something happens to a Skeksis, there's a mystic counterpart that experiences the same thing. So when this Skeksis died, there was a mystic just walking around that just... and none of the other mystics react. Yeah, it happens. Then we see that the mystics can control the crab monsters. I'm guessing it's because they're connected to the Skeksis who also can control the crab monsters. So having a mystic go with Jen on his journey in the first place would have been super helpful back when Kira's village was getting raided. Alright, let's just wrap this up. Vizgig dies, Jen's not really dead, he finds the dark crystal, he jumps to it and then drops the shard. Kira has to throw the shard back to Jen, but while she's doing that she gets murdered. I said spoiler warning, right? And then Jen plops that sucker back into the crystal. The castle crumbles around everyone and the world is saved. But first, the Skeksis and the Mystics walk into each other because they're connected, remember? They become one again, and are you ready for this? They walk into each other and they turn into tree aliens. I'm not even joking. According to the prequels, these things are actually aliens. This is what the whole movie has been building up to. The bad guys are just one half of a schizophrenic alien tree person, and if you read the prequels, you'd know that. Is this supposed to be a plot twist? Because to me, it just seems like a plot is doing whatever it wants. So much weird, unexplained stuff has already happened in this movie, so at this point, I don't even care. By the way, Kira and Vizgig don't actually die. This is a kid's movie, after all. And then the world is saved, even though there's only like 3 people who inhabit it now. The end. So that was the movie. Want to know something funny? I've already used more words in this video than there were words in the entire movie. Also, I need to ask, Jen was supposedly the chosen one.
At this time, Jen is the chosen one.
But I would make the argument that Kira should have been the chosen one. Let me go down my list. She saved Jen from the mud. She sniped a crystal bat out of the sky. When the crab monsters attacked, she had to tell Jen to run. She found the shard on the ground after Jen threw it. She tells Jen not to trust Chamberlain. She knew where the castle was and got the Landstriders to take them there. She used her wings to float Jen down to safety. She was able to get out of being turned into a slave by herself. And she threw the shard back to Jen after his butterfingers dropped it. And how does she get rewarded? By getting stabbed. All Jen did was play his flute at a magic rock. This guy's a doofus. Who chose Jen to be the chosen one? Bad choice. Now, I've said who my second and third favorite character in this movie is, but who's my favorite character? There's only like 3 other characters to choose from, so who could it be? Well, ladies and gentlemen, my favorite character isn't in this movie. My favorite character of the Dark Crystal universe is Rayunip. Agura's son. Okay, I know I just finished the movie, but let me talk about the prequel comics for a minute. Remember Agura, the old lady? Well, turns out she's an immortal being and has been around since the creation of this world. Alright, and one day a meteor hits the planet, and she, like anyone else would do, gives life to it. and out pops Reunip. And he's basically the main character of the prequel books, and is also technically an alien. I like him because he's the only one who questions what's going on. He asks the same questions I'm asking. So he's my favorite, he's the only character I ever wanted to cosplay. If they ever make the prequels into a movie, I call dibs on playing Reunip, that's how it works. I call dibs on playing this character. I just show up to auditions and I'm like, I actually called dibs, so... Also, in the second book, Augura and her son are having a moment, and Reunip says, "Will you remember me, mother, after all the harm I caused? I will never forget you, child." Well, you didn't really seem to remember him in the movie. Also, if there's any producers watching, that was my audition just now to play Reunip. Would I recommend you watch The Dark Crystal? Well, I did just spoil the whole thing, so no, it would be a waste of time at this point. But if I was talking to someone who hasn't watched this video, then yeah, I would recommend it. Even with all of its flaws, I still think it's a creative film and... I don't know, maybe it'd be fun to talk about it afterwards. Maybe I was desensitized doing all this research, but I also enjoyed the prequel comic books. After all, my favorite character's in there. There's also a manga that was made, Legends of the Dark Crystal, and it's supposed to take place in between these books and the movie, so these books don't even bridge the gap between the start of the... It leaves still on a cliffhanger. These books still leave on a cliffhanger. Speaking of manga, there were plans to make a sequel to The Dark Crystal, another movie, but the film ended up getting canceled. But a 12-part comic series is being produced by Boom Studios, and it's not even completed yet. They're only on, like, the second installment. This is recent, you guys, so now is a great time to get into the Dark Crystal fandom. Like I said, I think The Dark Crystal is a creative story. Jim Henson really bit off more than he can chew making this movie, but seeing how many comics have been made to tell this story, maybe The Dark Crystal is told better through comics and not with the limitations of puppets from the 80s. Anyway, that's just what I thought about the movie.
Imagine if Netflix, YouTube, and Hulu never existed. What would you be watching right now? Would you be watching this? I don't think so. You'd be watching this box right here. A television? On this device, instead of picking what you wanted to watch and when you wanted to watch it, the television would decide all that for you. And instead of watching a single 5-second skippable ad in the beginning, you'd have to watch 5 30-second long unskippable ads. Can you think of anything more annoying? An advertisement right in the middle of your show? I don't know if my parents were being cheap or trying to discourage an unhealthy habit of watching too much TV, but growing up, my parents didn't have cable television at all in the house. Now, in this modern day and age of online content, some of you are living perfectly content lives without cable. I know I am. But you have to understand, in the early 2000s, online video wasn't a thing. Yeah, YouTube was created in 2005, but what did that have? This guy at a zoo? That's lame. So being an early 2000s kid, you had to get your cartoons through the TV. And if your parents didn't pay $65 a month to get cable, then you didn't get the channels with SpongeBob, Jimmy Neutron, or Courage the Cowardly Dog. The only thing you got was this green brother and sister called PBS Kids. And whatever these things were. PBS Kids stands for Public Broadcasting Service. Kids. That meant all the shows on PBS Kids were government or privately funded. So the shows on PBS didn't really have any commercials per se, but they did have the same sponsorship ads that would play a message before every show. If you grew up on PBS Kids, then Juicy Juice and Where a Kid Can Be a Kid is just engraved in your memory. And also, every show would thank you, the viewer, for watching, and I think that's really nice. So, everyone watching this, you're welcome. I'm kinda glad my parents didn't buy cable, because instead of spending hours of my time watching mindless television, I spent hours of my time watching television with morals and math. Yep, a lot of shows on PBS were either educational or taught you how to be a good person. The shows I'm going to mention had pretty crazy concepts, but the conflicts in each episode were very down-to-earth and slice-of-life-y, almost like the shows were made for children. Like in Clifford the Big Red Dog. It's a show about this girl's dog who grew up to be the size of a freaking house for no reason except for the fact that the girl loved the dog so much that he grew up to be a monster. So that means if your dog is normal-sized, you don't love it enough. and it probably doesn't love you. So, yeah, giant red dog is a pretty weird premise, but the episodes were about everyday things, like this blue dog feels bad that he tore up his owner's sweater, and his friends tell him to just be honest, and he does, and everyone's happy. Or the episode where this new dog moves into town, but he's missing a leg, and then Clifford and his friends have to learn that having three legs still means you can accomplish a lot of things any normal human can do. I mean, dog. And I rate this show a 10 out of 10. Next is Dragon Tales, the show that made dragons kid-friendly. There's Org, he's the biggest, not so brave of heart. There's Cassie, she's so shy, but so very smart. There's Zack and Wheezy and their tales of fun. Cause you know two heads are better than one. Dragon Tales, Dragon Tales, it's almost time for Dragon Tales. The show was pretty similar to Clifford. The characters would spend an episode learning everyday things like how to do a cartwheel, or they would try to make it rain so they could show their friend what a rainbow looks like. And there was also this grandpa dragon who knew Spanish for some reason.
Don't come too close, niños.
And that wasn't the weirdest thing on the show, actually. There was also a dragon character in a wheelchair, which, just like Clifford, is a good character because it teaches kids that disabled people are still people who can accomplish a lot of things. But I think it's a weird combination of two things. A dragon, a mythical beast known for destroying cities, in a wheelchair? If you wanted to stop a dragon from destroying your city, then you just don't install wheelchair ramps anywhere. I should stop talking. I rate the show a 10 out of 10. Now let's talk about Arthur. Here's some fun trivia. Arthur is supposed to be an aardvark. Personally, I don't see it. Basically, it was a show about Arthur and his other furry friends learning lessons, but Arthur tended to tackle more serious subjects than the other two shows. Like, they have episodes where DW hears her parents get in a fight and she worries about them getting a divorce, or the episode where Arthur Falcon punches his little sister, and even having to deal with someone you know getting cancer.
What? Cancer?
The character gets treatment and lives, by the way. Because it's a kid's show. 10 out of 10. Next, let's talk about my favorite show on PBS Kids, Cyber Chase.
Cyber Chase, we're moving, we're beating Hacker at his game. Don't come in, we'll get him every time.
This show didn't teach kids morals or how to properly treat the disabled. It taught them something far more important. Math. Cyber Chase is set inside a virtual computer world, and this one character named Motherboard was supposed to be the queen slash protector of this world, but she sucks at her job because the villain of the show, Christopher Lloyd, infects her with a virus. So now these three kids have to go on adventures using math principles to thwart the bad guy's plans to save Mommy Board. Motherboard? Motherboard? Mommy? Mom, come back. Mommy, now. We need to save Mommy Board! And unlike all the other shows, this show had an overarching story. The kids would always get this close to saving Mother Board, but nothing they did worked. When I was a kid, I always wondered how much longer it would be until they finally saved her. And they never did. The show's been going on for 16 years, and they're still learning new math principles trying to save Motherboard. I think they're at calculus at this point. The show is teaching you slower than an actual school. What kind of a show makes you wait 16 years for a conclusion? Cyber Chase does, and it's one of the best shows ever created. 10 out of 10. One last show I want to bring up is called Caillou. All you need to know about Caillou is that I hate him. Caillou is a 4-year-old and a demon. He constantly throws a tantrum whenever he doesn't get his way. Even in his theme song, he mentions how much of a brat he is.
Growing up is not so tough, except when I've had enough.
And then he's crying like a child. Well, you're gonna have to grow up, Caillou. The world doesn't revolve around you. Now you might be thinking, James, this kid is 4 years old. Of course he's gonna be a brat. And I agree, but a big problem with Caillou isn't the fact that he's a brat, but it's with his spineless parents. Caillou's mom just lets him get away with everything. Whenever I misbehaved, you know what happened to me? I had to go sit in the timeout corner. You know what happens to Caillou? Nothing! Not once does Caillou ever get punished! It's always his mom just being like, Caillou, what you said wasn't very nice. Now go behave, okay? 0 out of 10 with the show with just the humans. I hate it. I just realized that all the shows I mentioned were animated, but there was a lot of non-animated shows that I still watched. But whatever, I could just say that these shows fit the theme of my channel. Or it can make a part two, I can do whatever I want. Now, as a diehard PBS fanboy, I think I speak for everyone when I say that what PBS was missing was a crossover episode. How hard would it have been for the Clifford people and the Dragon Tales people to coordinate an episode where the three-legged dog finds the dragon scale, he could dig it up out of the sand because dogs like to dig, except this dog wouldn't be that good at digging, and then he would meet up with a wheelchair dragon and they could be best friends. I would have loved that. As much as I'm joking about it, as a kid, I actually really wanted a crossover episode between the shows Clifford and Clifford's Puppy Days, which is another show that follows Clifford before he was interesting, when he was tiny, so before Emily Elizabeth loved him. So there was a bunch of new characters that all knew Clifford when he was little, and the two shows existed in the same universe, so it wouldn't have been that unbelievable for Clifford to visit his childhood home, and then all the other characters who used to call him Small or Squirt would see him now and be like, "Wow! What the f*** happened to you?" You see, it's funny because it's a kid's show and you wouldn't expect them to say that. I waited patiently for that crossover episode, but it never came. But at least I have fanfiction. George, he wagged his tail and smiled. Clifford, it's so good to see you. He nuzzled him as a greeting. Nice to see you too. It's been over 7 years since I last saw you. Yeah, it had, Clifford said happily. George turned his back to the hill. Here I come. There's no quotation marks, by the way. He got ready to tackle him. He punched George off, and they rolled down. Then, when they got to the bottom, George pinned Clifford, who was panting. The three looked at the two of them, who seemed to be having a staring contest. So they decided to go they somewhere else. Both laughed, and Clifford got off of him. He sat down and waited for George to stand up. So, what are we gonna do? The red dog said while quickly getting into a playing position. Okay, that's enough. I think that everyone at some point in their life should work in a fast food or retail job. Not to improve their work ethic or anything, but so that everyone knows what it's like to have that kind of job. They wouldn't work in fast food their whole lives, maybe just like for 6 months, just so they get a feel for it. So with that, let's talk about the time when I worked in fast food. I used to work at a very small local sandwich shop. I don't know if any of you guys heard of it. It's called Subway. Our spokesperson was in the news recently. I don't know if you guys look at the news. Did you hear he got beat up in jail? I kind of want to meet the person who beat up Jared more than Jared. Not in person. We wouldn't meet in person, obviously. But, like, he would be behind bars, and I would just look at the guy who beat up my spokesperson. How many people get to say that they beat up a fast food icon who is also a pedophile? Only one, and it's that guy. Okay, but seriously, guys, working at Subway was probably one of the most easiest jobs out there. I don't know why I'm about to complain about it to you guys. We got free cookies. And you know the comic with the Subways in Hell? I was actually working at Subway when I made that comic. I just think it adds sort of a little bit of value to it. You see, the owners, who are husband and wife, can you believe it, of the Subway I worked at owned two stores. One of the Subway stores was in a Walmart on an Indian reservation, because we have those in Arizona, and the other Subway was the Subway I worked at. And since the Walmart store was always busy, the owners would spend 99% of their time at that store. So I didn't really have a boss most of the time. On the off chance the owners did show up, they would just pick up some food and then they would